This is a Zodiac Degrees podcast. I'm Greta Lee. Today, the degree that we're looking at is the 29th degree of Leo, and the occasion for looking at it is the February 16th, 2022 full moon at the 28th degree 00 minute of Leo, which in ordinal numbers is the 29th degree. This is happening at about 11:56 a.m. Eastern Standard Times, and there's also a Venus and Mars conjunction at the 17th degree of Capricorn at the same time. This episode, I'll only be looking at the 29th degree of Leo, and you can apply this to natal chart if you have a planet at this degree, or electional charts, horary charts, mundane astrology charts, any sort of zodiac, any sort of astrological chart where you're pinpointing certain degrees on the zodiac. Okay, so looking at my first resource, which is the Astrolabium Planum by Johannes Engel from 1488, shows a wood print, and it is two people standing there. It looks like they're like shaking hands or holding hands or like passing something maybe from one hand to the other. They're just both standing there with, you know, their right hands outstretched. One guy is, it looks like one's a man and one's a woman. Like, so one guy has like this little like medieval style, like skull cap. Look, it looks kind of like a beanie or like a winter hat, but I'm picturing it like a different style because it's medieval time, and then like a big cloak. And then she has her hair up and she's wearing like a old timey dress, like a long sleeve dress with a high waist. The William Lilly translation of the caption is, "In the 29 degree, a man and woman holding one another by the hands. An amiable person is hereby signified." Okay, so there are two people being nice to each other, holding hands or shaking hands or something. I don't know when the handshake started. That'd be something interesting to look up. Okay, Dr. Mark Edmund Jones, The Sabian Symbols in Astrology. His symbol is a mermaid. And it says, as interpretation, appetite for psychological self-assurance, eagerness of soul for self-fulfillment, ineradicable purity of man's makeup, repudiation of all compromises demanded in everyday relationships. The individual seeks and responds to creative needs of life. The keyword is importunity. And importunity means persistence, especially to the point of annoyance. Okay, and then there's also this like in the search engine, it comes up with what does importunity mean in the Bible? So it seems like a kind of out of date word. And there's like an article about praying with importunity, like being very persistent about praying all the time for religious people. So, the seeking, this like urgent, almost annoying seeking, and positive aspects of this degree. Dr. Jones says, quickening to inner instincts of the being and a willingness to trust them. And here, like a little bit of an archaic use or out of date use of the word quicken, like not necessarily faster, but more like stimulated, that sort of secondary definition. So a stimulation of inner instincts of the being and willing of the being and a willingness to trust them. And the negative parts of this degree can be a lack of discrimination and an awkward insensitivity. Okay. And Dane Rudyard in The Astrology of Personality writes, "Mermaid awaits prince who will make her immortal." And it says, "Pure longing for a new order of selfhood, critical point in emergent evolution, perspective or sense of incompetence." In an astrological mandala written a few decades later by Dane Rudyard, he writes, a mermaid emerges from the ocean waves, ready for rebirth in a human form. Okay, so there's a little different aspects of like a mermaid story happening, and these stemming out from just the plain mermaid of the original Sabian symbol. And Rudyard says his keynote is the stage at which an intense feeling intuition rising from the unconscious is about to take form as a conscious thought. Here, the mermaid personifies a stage of awareness, and she is partially enveloped by the ever-moving and ever-elusive ocean of the collective unconscious, but she is already half-formulated by the conscious mind. Thinking of like, yeah, like a hybrid moment of like half fish, half human. It says any creative thinker or artist knows well the peculiar mixture of elation and anxiety characterizing such a stage. Will the intuitive feeling fade away, reabsorbed into the unconscious, or will the inexpressible realization acquire the concreteness and expressible form of a concept or a definite motif in art form? And the fire of desire for concrete and steady form burns at the root of all techniques of self-expression. An unconscious energy archetype reaching towards consciousness as cosmic love seeks tangible manifestation through human lovers. And the whole pre-human universe reaches eagerly to the human stage of clear and steady consciousness, an evolutionary urge, this élan vital, which is implied in the symbol of the mermaid seeking human incarnation, yearning for consciousness, form, and solidity. So that's just the figure of the mermaid is so interesting as, you know, a symbol and as a character in a story or the subject of a story. Of course, Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid from the 19th century, from actually 1837 was when he published it. But the idea of mermaids goes back so long. I was like just looking it up a little bit, and the first time that we have evidence of like the concept of a mermaid is from cave paintings about 30,000 years ago in the Stone Age. And I guess human beings had like control of the sea, or were, you know, sailing the sea at that point. And I think that also it's important to know there's mermaids in like so many different cultures. I think that the Greek siren is really important to bring up, that were like seen in the Odyssey. And the word siren is related to the meaning rope, which like mermaids would tie or grab sailors and like enchant them with their songs and then like tie them and kill them. So there are these ominous creatures, but this idea of this strong desire and this like enchantment and like bewitching eroticism and desire and appeal to steer you off course. Of course, I can't help but think of like the Disney's version of The Little Mermaid in the early 90s, which was, you know, basically taken from Hans Christian Andersen. But my favorite mermaid movie is The Lure by Polish director, I'm not going to get this pronunciation right, Agnieszka Smoczynik. It's on Criterion Collection. It's a 2015 movie called The Lure. It's set in 1980s Poland, and it's just so amazing. It's just such an unexpected movie, and it pulls in a lot of different little tidbits from like mermaid lore and siren lore, and really just creatively resets it in like an unpredictable time and place and in like a nightclub in the 1980s. And it's just such a great movie, and also just has so much like relevance in this as like almost a coming of age story. But yeah, definitely highly recommend that. But yeah, just this like idea of this hybrid creature of like half fish, half person. And it just, there's not just mermaids, but all sorts of hybrid creatures. I'm thinking of like Aztec or Mayan statuary that I've seen that's like half jaguar, half man, depicting like shamans, like psychedelic becoming of a jaguar, of like a jaguar spirit or hybrid. I know in like Norse culture, there were cults of warriors that would become wolves or become bears. And that's where the word berserker comes from. It's like this becoming like a animal bear. And even thinking of like the werewolf, right? And were being a very old root word from the Indo-European language, like 4,000 years ago, were meant man. Wolf meant wolf. So werewolf, wolfman. And even what we say world, that means like where old, like the place where the man walks around world, right? There's just these ideas go back so long. So this Sabian symbol of a mermaid is pretty exciting, and it has such deep this long timeline of collective imagination and like collective contemplation about what it means to be human versus what it means to be of another animal, of another, of the sea versus of the land. Anyway, okay, moving on to Linda Hill, the Sabian symbols as an oracle. She says, a mermaid has climbed to the rocky shore of a bleak coast. She awaits the prince who will bring her immortality. And she says, a woman who has existed in the waters of being, now ready to emerge into a more conscious existence. She may have to leave her home behind in order to move into a new life, a new relationship, or a new beginning of some kind. And Linda Hill brings up Princess Diana here, who had her North Node at this exact degree. And I don't think she doesn't often bring up particular like famous people, but that's a huge like bullseye of this. I mean, you know, Princess Diana wasn't even born when the Sabian symbols were originally thought of, but she sort of has this story. Also this idea that Leo is a fire sign, right? And this is like a sun, like this sun ruled fire degree, but there's this real water element in a lot of this imagery. And to think of that that spark of creativity and of identity that Rudyard was bringing up, that like elevates someone out of the collective unconsciousness of feeling and sort of wordlessness and formlessness, which, yeah, and that spark of love too, that of like seeing somebody, and that can be like, you know, you see the prince or you see the princess, and then something sparks within you, making you realize your own identity of who you are encountered in contrast to this other person. And that Leo light of awareness and that sun principle. So Linda Hill says, you must believe in your ability to cope as an individual in new arenas. Seeking perfection in oneself or partner. I mean, and this is so interesting too, because Leo is like, has so much to do with identity and being in the spotlight and being like the one, the individual, the special person. And then this has this relationship of this prince here, of that this relationship is intrinsic to understanding yourself as an individual in this particular degree. So seeking perfection in oneself or partner. Insecurity when you realize you are out of your depth. How do you react when you realize immortality is not likely to come to you through your prince? Expecting others to acknowledge your existence. Feeling invisible until they do. I love that like Leo need to be on stage, need to be at the center of attention, but that attention needs to be there, that like that opposite, like Aquarius crowd, or, you know, or here, I mean, it's like this water is so, it's interesting because, the water isn't as like precisely, angled from this Leo position. So it's an interesting relationship. It says, be careful not to project too much authority onto your partner. Other people, likely someone in particular, is likely to bring you insight of your own capabilities, talents, and attributes. She also makes the point to say the female mermaid, male prince does not always break down on gender lines like this. I mean, the mermaid could be a male waiting for his princess, or, you know, there's all sorts of ways you could queer this. I mean, already the mermaid is this sort of hybrid creature, and that could, you know, take any number of levels of interpretation, and people could relate to this in so many different ways. She also says learning to communicate emotions, thoughts, ideas, being able to verbalize and express oneself. Just thinking of that voice and taking the voice being removed from the mermaid, right, as sort of this deal, this like Faustian bargain to be able to get into the human sphere. It says being able to verbalize and express oneself, walking the walk or walking the talk, right? Walking the walk versus just talking the talk. Finding a place and sense of purpose, immortality that can be achieved in this new reality. How will the partner cope when the mermaid gains her own feet? There's a new sense of belonging and bringing ideas into the new world of experience. So yeah, just thinking of how like that Piscean feet, that being able to just take these first new steps, are so necessary to be able to eventually walk and dance in the spotlight or in the sun, you know, to walk into the light in a sense. And being able to say something and being able to have some purpose and expression and focus. Okay. She also says coming into conscious form, new forms of being, transformation, new forms emerging from the past, needing and or expecting recognition, feeling different from the crowd, learning to stand on your own two feet, and can indicate problems with feet or legs. The caution is focusing on social or rational aspects before being ready, naivete, being thrown in the deep end, relying on relationships too much, looking for validation for one's existence. And that's this idea of this relationship being all important, is a huge, you know, and the price we pay for love and all that stuff being a huge theme in, The Little Mermaid. Linda Hill has some quotes. I'll just pick a couple, that relate to this degree. The 29th degree of Leo says, hope is the expectation that something outside of ourselves, something or someone eternal, is going to come to our rescue and we will live happily ever after. That's from Dr. Robert Anthony. And the next quote is, higher than the question of our duration is the question of our deserving. Immortality will come to such as fit for it, as he would be a great soul in the future, must be a great soul now. Ralph Waldo Emerson. This idea of attention and deserving and being validated, but then feeling super awkward, makes me think of quote unquote imposter syndrome, right? Of you're thrown into this position, you don't know if you quite add up, and do you feel like some like sideshow freak, you know, where with flippers and no voice and you're powerless in the world of real humans or real adults, right? Or can you sort of just understand your strength, have faith in yourself and know you'll do it, and find partnerships that help you do it rather than finding partnerships that are crutches for your continued insecurities. Really interesting thoughts. Okay, charitable. The degrees of the zodiac symbolized. The degree image here is a number of mathematical instruments on a table with a large sheet of blank white paper. Okay, it's totally, totally different. Other than the fact that I just feel like the mermaid thing is this real kind of out of place Piscean image for me, and I always feel like math, like advanced theoretical math, is very Piscean as well, and that sort of ocean of information is sort of similar to this like ocean of numbers that has no language or sort of cultural barriers. That's just my own thoughts. But Charitable says about this degree that it can indicate one possessing mathematical abilities beyond the ordinary. There is some room for doubt that he may fail to follow up such a noble exercise. He may be carried away into other pursuits, which he has not at all adapted, and which in the end will yield no satisfaction. So that's interesting of like somebody realizing their own talents or not realizing their own talents, and like looking to other people being like, well, that prince is good at hunting. Maybe I should be a hunter. And it's like, well, you are not the prince. Do not like identify with your partner or your ideal partner or something. You have to sort of figure out your own strengths. Okay. Sephiriel, in the degrees of the zodiac symbolized, says, two golden circles joined together by a blue ribbon tied in a double bow. Wow, I like these old-timey sort of abstract images. and it says, one of a kind, benevolent nature, fortunate in marriage, may marry twice, a lover of peace and conquered, an idealist, embodying two lives in one, a researcher in celestial things, will make many and sincere friends. Life will be useful, lovable, sincere. Will attain his ambitions. Will end his days in peace, union. So that's beautiful and very positive. And this marriage or partnership being really important, but also this duality of the two golden circles joined together by a nice little ribbon can be two people, right? But it also, it says someone embodying two lives in one, right? You have your ocean mermaid life and you have your aristocracy life in the Polish court or wherever, whatever princedom you marry into. That being an ambition of having, of moving from one type of life to the next, being this like wonderful, happy thing that you'll attain that ambition. Okay, Isidore Kosminski, zodiacal symbology and its planetary powers. The symbol is a man climbing a ladder and helping others who strive behind him. At the top, a veiled figure holds out to him a wreath of stars. Okay, I love this because there's two people again, and there's, instead of going from the ocean to the land, there's some ascent on a ladder, but there's a before and after, there's an ambition and a different world, right, on top of the ladder. And then there's that wreath of stars, which is so similar to those two golden circles, right, which... That like circle of victory and completion or wedding rings or this eternity, and that also connecting to the immortality bestowed upon you by a prince. Obviously identifying more with the mermaid here than the prince, but go, you know, you can identify with the prince if you like or none of it. So Kosminski interprets this as has the power to rise in the world. Has the heart to help others rise as well. Soul of sympathy and justice merits the victor's wreath. Every action of kindness to the suffering and struggling brings blessing of power, a symbol of rewarding. And it's interesting that it says a symbol of rewarding, not rewards. And there's more about like the action of that connection of bestowing rewards of just that moment. It's like that thing where you're given this beautifully wrapped gift and it doesn't, for a moment, it's like almost doesn't even matter what's in it. It's just the anticipation and the fun of the gift, than, you know, what the tangible reward is. All right. Helene and Willem Kapion, the Zodiac Image Handbook. And the first image they give is the angel of the sun touches the earth with the point of his flaming sword, making sparks fly before a crouching lion with his head raised. It is caparisoned with saddles, a saddle and plumes. And caparisoned means like decked out in like all sorts of finery, like sort of like an elephant or a horse on parade with like ribbons and fabrics and all sorts of decorations. Or in this case, a saddle and feathers. And it says, Jandas suggests the angel is Gabriel. And Gabriel means God's strength and is one of the four archangels. There's nine hierarchies above man and beast. Angels are second from below. And it says, if you have the 29th degree of Leo prominent, you should study higher hierarchies of creation and be aware of counterfeits. I mean, that's some real occult stuff there. I know that in astrological magic with astrology rituals in Agrippa and all sorts of older sources, it gives instructions that you don't ask directly, like a planet directly for a gift, or you can't talk to the sun, or you can't talk to Jupiter directly. There's sort of these intermediaries that you have to go through, which are why like angels are these intermediaries. They're messengers, right? They're in like the Bible. It's like an angel shows up and says, do not be afraid. I'm here to tell you something from, you know, like a higher deity. They're sort of like the worker deities, the mercurial deities per se, but there's all sorts of levels and you can get into all that, those sort of cosmologies. And it's interesting because there's, you know, transition from the mermaid transitioning from the ocean to the land. Now, the Kapions bring up all sorts of transitions of different layers of consciousness, and like these metaphysical, theoretical, or I don't know how, I would say maybe not theoretical, untangible levels. I'm not sure how to, there's definitely some like theurgy into this and certain strict rules of, and different belief systems of exactly, like this says nine hierarchies. Or I know there's like seven levels of hell, right? And all these sort of, diagrams you in old art that are really cool and beautiful, but like highly specific. Kapion talks about this image, says splendor. Over-decorated lion is a danger for Leo. Spiritual laziness, indolence, outer glory, no true will to humble and discipline themselves. They think too much of themselves, overestimate their own prominence, and are puffed up in the same importance. Is there any sign more fun to insult than Leo? Because Leos are think so highly of themselves, so it's so fun to take them down a notch. I mean, I love Leos, so any insults are completely like flirty taunts. So I'm not trying to actually tear any Leos down. But it says the right side speaks in a higher, truly important language. The highest symbol of the royal side of Leo, the messenger of the sun, the creator of love, light, and heat. The to the earth with his flaming sword with words of the spirit. The irresistible performance of power and glory, they will sparkle and radiate. I'm thinking of this, the Rudyar spark, that fire desire of the mermaid to get out of the water, and hear the that sparkle, that fire from above, like lifting oneself up to royalty and to nobility. It says extremely independent, high ideals and faith, true transmitters of words of wisdom, if only they put themselves in the right order of hierarchies, right? So the mermaid's trying to like force herself into human relationship, but maybe that's not like she's trying to jump the gun too much and trying to, you know, run the show or talk and walk before she's ready. It says classic archetype of Prometheus stealing fire, has to learn to wait and be patient while others are facing the cosmic consuming fire. Right, the mermaid seeing humans do all these amazing things. They want to be a part of it, right? But it's maybe disastrous to push yourself into that. It says, must learn feminine faculties of waiting and receiving are as important as masculine burning sun powers penetrating the earth. Right. So as much as like in practical, on a practical level, like Linda Hill said, this doesn't always like break down by gender lines, but there are sort of conceptual gender binaries of feminine and masculine, like in a more abstract sense that you can meditate upon here. Lamp and screen, sun and earth, light and mirror. Right. So I love this light and mirror and this lamp and screen, because the screens we look at today are illuminated and sort of are lamps in and of themselves. Like if you're walking from a car in a dark area, you can use your phone screen as like a flashlight or whatever. You could be in a dark room with an illuminated screen, but thinking of that as this like false light compared to the sun, and actually screening experiences of the world out, like looking into the screen, is that actually like blocking you in some ways? That's kind of just a side note. Okay. Back to Kapyan says, exist by the great grace of great wholeness in the hierarchy. Right. Talking about this hierarchy again, and then thinking of like hierarchies so often associated with Saturn, and hierarchy being this like automatically horrible word, like, oh, like racial hierarchy or something that's just like obviously horrible, right? Or like class hierarchy, which is like unfair and exploitative. But then there's like a wholeness in hierarchies that makes sense. Like if you have a child and you're the parent and you be like, hey, we have a non-hierarchical household, it's like, that's just foolishness. I mean, of course you want to be teaching your kid like ideas of equality and giving them tools to be independent people. But when it's time for bed, you say it's time for bed. You don't have like a vote, right? And I think that, I mean, I've experienced to some degree sort of like Quaker or very liberal sort of like child rearing methods. And so, sometimes they're just so beautiful and honorable and sort of high-minded, and other times it really breaks down. Like it really doesn't work sometimes. And you have to just be like, no to bed, no candy. It's not like you're going to have like a long conversation with a 9-year-old, whether they can smoke cigarettes or not. If they're curious about smoking cigarettes, you just say, no, you're 9, like go to bed. You're grounded. But anyway, that's a tangent, but I like this idea of Saturn being a leader and the sun being a leader. And Saturn hierarchies often look seeming like they're crushing, and they're sort of it's like hard, cold, harsh reality. But the Sun hierarchy has this sort of like paternalism, right? That like kindly Sun father, where this hierarchy is really for your own good in a sense. Or maybe there could be some sort of afflictedness to this hierarchy and it actually isn't for your own good. But to think like, hey, you're a beginner at walking. I'm not going to like put you in a marathon today. Like, I'm your running coach and I wouldn't do that to you, right? Like that sort of like kindly like progression of an evolution of talent or skill or like life cycle. And that's like the Sun having things, helping things grow, right? Especially this like hierarchy of like, you don't take a kindergartner and put them in a calculus class. You let them go through the hierarchy of different styles of math, right? Or it's probably not called styles of math, but you know, you get what I'm saying, different, you know, progressions of math. Okay, so the second image that Capion offers is a mermaid awaits the prince who will make her immortal. And it says, pure longing for new order in selfhood, an emerging evolution from the unconscious to the conscious. Two orders of being that can only emerge together through a higher type of love. Angel and beast, prince and mermaid, spirit and soul merge together for and true enlightenment of eternity is born. And it says, study mermaid stories and ponder inner meaning. Okay. Adriano Corelli, this 360 degrees of the zodiac, says, two newlyweds exchanging the wedding ring. Okay, love it, because that the Astrolabium Planum wood print image has like a man and a woman shaking hands. And then the sephorial image is those like two rings tied with a bow. So here they're like explicitly wedding rings. And it says, this is related to the previous degree, the 28th degree of Leo. Which is two friends shaking hands, which there's always interesting like bleed over and orbs of all these degrees, and I'm trying to keep everything in its lane as possible, but it is interesting like if to look at degrees like up a budding, right, an activated degree, of course, and degrees that are in, you know, aspect. But trying to give as much focus here as possible to each individual degree and sort of suss out the different interpretations. So this is a focus on friendship and social life pivots to family, right? Yeah. Like you have a part, you know, you're friends with people, you have a lot of friendships, but then you have that one, right? That's really special. And then they're your family. And you know, I think there's like also this idea of like chosen family, right? I mean, but that's sort of this like newer, more contemporary, like oftentimes like queer associated, like chosen family. But anyone you marry, or as long as it's not an arranged marriage, or anyone you like choose to have a partnership is chosen family, right? It's like graduating from being a child in, you know, someone else's family to sort of being able to choose your own or intentionally create your own a little bit more. So this pivot is crucial at this degree. And someone with this degree may marry more than once. They may suffer great pains through the partner's divorce or death. But then they also may have happiness in marriage. I think that's always the truth, that people who have, you know, great happiness and great fortune sort of will always suffer, you know, blows to that fortune at some time or another, right? Even if it's just once or twice. But then there's people who, right, like if you never have a job, right, and you just sort of like live at home for your life, you'll never feel the pain of getting fired, right? You'll have other experiences, but you know, if you never get married, you'll never have the pain of having that marriage break up or have that true, intense partnership get damaged, or become no more. So happiness in marriage, in general luck. It says, quiet old age spent in pleasant recollection of good work. Also a gift for mathematics. And this gift may stay unheeded, unexploited, unknown. And the native may drift to less congenial, less satisfying activities. So again, this theme of a partnership, a marriage, you know, a intimate family forming connection that also has like some sort of element of an individual maybe depending too much on this connection and not developing their inner resources, right? Just thinking of somebody looking to the sun, say maybe, you know, someone has Venus and at this degree in their seventh house, right? And they are looking to this their partner for the beauty and the love, right? And they have to remember that they're bringing something to the table too. It's not all the other person. Okay. Jarrell Keen, practical astrology. Cornucopia denotes one who has plenty. Degree effective on the progressed ascendant. Right. That's another chart. Always interesting when planets hit progressed points. Not only brings abundance, but brings it from many directions. Well, that's nice. E.C. Matthews says, fixed stars and E.C. Matthews from the fixed stars and degrees of the zodiac analyze says abundance. It says the fixed star Regulus, which the fixed star Regulus is not here at this degree anymore. It is at, I think, the very last degree at Leo and perhaps the first degree of Virgo now. I'm not exactly, I looked it up, it says last degree of Leo, but I think if you have any planet, if you have a planet at the 29th degree of Leo or the first degree of Virgo, it is affected, right? There's an orb there. And Regulus is, you know, one of the royal stars, is a hugely relevant, like, fixed star. What if, you know, if you don't do fixed stars, this is one of the four, right, to maybe pay attention to, even if you don't do anything with them. But I'm not going to go too into Regulus on this degree. I'll save that for the 30th degree of Leo. Anyway, abundance, said to denote command, idealism, or violence and destructiveness. Good intellect, strong will, mature judgment, a thinker who analyzes and plans on big stage scale, and an experimenter whose work is never finished. Okay. I mean, the command, idealism, or violence, I mean, that seems like more like a Regulus concept. And also it makes me think of the symbolism for the third decan of Leo, which is like a fighting sort of a fighting spirit. Okay, Donna Walter Henson, degrees of the zodiac, astrology. So I mean, when she says astrology in the cult, it's like almost like I shouldn't even say it because it's like you're into astrology and you're reading an astrology book. It's like you had to. Sociable, enterprising, at some period in life, they experience abundance when money pours in. But if afflicted, violence and destructiveness. Also, music and the cardiac septum. Right? The Leo degrees, Leo rules the heart, right? That Leonine heart of gold. Esther Leinbach and degrees of the zodiac. Says enhances all qualities of friendship, natural skill at close relationships, and this is the focus of their strength. And this idealism is a handicap in societies motivated by selfish gains, right? Yeah, think of that mermaid, that naive mermaid entering the human world of liars and, you know, shifty manipulators. It says, appreciated more. This degree is appreciated more as humanity at large finds it important to join hands in cooperative effort. This degree indicates a sincere belief that sharing will result in broader security and comfort. Yeah, this sort of like family paternalism, that light and love that lifts other people up, like moving up that ladder. These people find it hard to go alone. Yeah, that's a very like, you know, they want to be special. They want to be in the spotlight, but they can't be alone, right? They need to be special within a group. Martin Goldsmith, the Zodiac degrees. A mermaid finding her captor deaf to her entreaties manages to crawl through a small window and find her way back to the ocean. So I love this. Instead of a mermaid wishing to get out of the ocean for a prince, this is like a mermaid escaping back to the ocean. So I like that that flipping that on its head. And it says, getting used to oppressive or political or emotional situation versus suffering discomfort and insecurity of moving to a freer place. I love this because this is sort of this book was published in 2004, and there's this like, partnerships, marriages are very important, right? And if you are an emotionally abusive one or just an emotionally shitty one, it doesn't necessarily have to be to the level of abuse. You just may be unhappy. That's not good, right? And you could stay sort of stagnant, because it's freaky to go out on your own without the, you know, scaffolding of the known relationship. It says expatriates, being exotically different than others and thus liable to misunderstanding and persecution. Strange otherworldly art, fighting for human rights against cruelty and barbarism. Thinking of that exotic mermaid could be, you know, any sort of example of someone who's a fish out of water, right? That could be easily mistreated. Making self-preservation one's priority. Complainers who expect others to take care of the injustices of their own situation. versus taking the situation in hand. I'm thinking of the like tweet, format lately that's been like the feminine trait or the masculine trait of. So this is like the feminine trait of complaining about your lot in life and doing nothing to change it. You know, that we definitely see that a lot. And I would say a lot of women, as a woman, I'll say a lot of women do that. Also, this degree can signify being torn between conflicting desires or loyalties. Having to decide if your own desires are worth pursuing. Death or stagnation / emotional addictions. And fortitude of spirit that takes one through troubled times. Having to decide if your own desires are worth pursuing. I think meeting some people sometimes makes you reevaluate your own desires or articulate them more, you know, edit your desires, right, when you have certain experiences. Okay, John Sambach, the Chandra symbols in the Zodiac, says a broken sword. So this makes me think of the angel with the fiery sword in the Kapion image. And a broken sword says denial of physical power sources as a means of attaining to more refined levels of energy, rejection of conflict. Okay, so this means of attaining, right, not being violent to attain things and attaining things through love, like maybe, because there's this idea of this ambition of becoming, you know, a real human, or maybe this Pinocchio, like I'm becoming a real boy, and this like power of love to transform people to the next level versus fighting your way there. Again, I'm thinking of the third decan of Leo imagery of somebody like fighting to the end, a sort of Hail Mary battle cry, right? Versus thinking that, like, that siren song of the mermaid of, you don't want to get entangled in that fight. It's more, cause it's more of this seduction. And you can't fight against it. It's like this, you have to reject that conflict and sort of cultivate yourself and cultivate relationships. Okay. And Elias Lonsdale in Inside Degrees, translates or interprets the Chandra symbols, a broken sword, says consecration to a higher power, giving over the personal will. I like that too, giving over the personal will, like breaking a sword and sort of being like, I can't fight against you. You have won me over. I love you, right? Like, I'm a lover, not a fighter, right? Somebody sort of, that mermaid twirls the prince around her little finger, and there's a different sort of, relationship there than a, adversarial one. Although a seventh house relationship, nonetheless, it says the marvel root of change, coming to the end of your own path. And that's just the beginning of the greater way. Thinking of that mermaid swimming, and then she hits the rocky shore, right? How is she supposed to move on, right? It's like she has to become something different to move on. She's at the end of the path of her old identity. She has to, you know, get legs now. It says, heart must be open. The infinite must be born inside. There's a destiny, necessity, and much karmic backlog. There's many ways to be right and many ways to be wrong. Nobody is listening to the old tale. They're waiting for someone else to come through. There's a profound doorway into the unknown. What has been finished and what shall be are very different. Which makes me think this is the second to last degree of a fixed sign. It's, you know, it's like this is getting towards the end of this solar period, right? And there's this thing of being like, have you figured out who you are? Can you connect with other people? Can you, as your own person, you know, this is sort of this this mature degree of this fixed fire energy. And what's going to be in the Virgo, the Virgo realm is very different, a different emphasis and a different sort of individualism, you know, like a level up of individualism, where you don't need that attention, you don't need that validation, but the Leo energy still does. And we all do in some degree, you know, right? It says, what is now? A question, a prayer, a destiny that much must find its redemption. Wow. This is a really, the moment between the old life and the new life through this partnership is just this moment of a question, that question being this like hybrid idea, right? Of like inquiry and answer, right? And that sort of, duality of half fish, half person, half human, that like imagination, intuition, and, you know, action, reification. I don't know. There's all sorts of dualities here at play. Very interesting. Okay, Gavin McClung and the Hyperion symbols, dynamite factory. this is like a Simpsons episode where the Bart Simpson wants to go to like a puppy dog candy and dynamite factory. That's what makes me think of this. Okay, it says a tension between potential and realization, a careful caution, unknowable factor can be unpredictable and produce even its least possible manifestation. All right. So dynamite, like thinking of a dynamite factory in real life and not in The Simpsons, which I think that was like a firecracker factory, actually, now that I think of it. That would be kind of like a place you're super, super careful. Like you don't like casually light up a cigarette there, right? It says there's restraint and control over expression and a prevention from doing something or delay. So this that spark being so powerful that in this factory, just like that spark of love in that mermaid's heart for the prince can just blow up her life, blow up her world, right? And here, but she doesn't want to maybe blow up her life yet. There needs to be a little bit more of a gentle progression into it. There is a delay from completely like going in. I mean, I think there's just thinking of falling in love and like getting engaged with someone. There's that moment of, oh, I'm really going to take the leap, right? You've fallen in love, right? And there's this losing control and just going over to, but this like excitement and attempt to control like your feelings or at least not be a complete fool. Oh, that's interesting. And we do have an image from the Hidden Secret in the Address of the Stars. And this is a manuscript that was, this manuscript I'm looking at was created in 1580, but it was illustrated and copied from previous manuscripts. It was originally translated into Persian in around 1211 or 1235, somewhere in that range. So we don't know, or academics haven't yet sussed out how old this imagery really is. And this imagery is probably from like a pre-Islamic, like Persian culture. Like this is some sort of indigenous Persian magic ritual. But there's not really enough background on this manuscript that is in India now. It's in New Delhi. So this image here is a man he's in this beautiful red sort of robe, and he's sitting on the ground. He sort of has like one leg out in front of him and one like knee bent, and he's rubbing his hands together, and he's in a patch of dirt, and behind him is like grass and there's trees around him. And then behind that is this beautiful architecture. So it seems like he's outside of this village or the city or in a park or in some sort of little nature. And he's in a patch of dirt, rubbing his hands together. And his hair's down. He has a big old mustache. And most of these images, the people have like a turban on or some sort of headdress. And this one, his hair is like loose down behind his back and on either side of him. And his head looks like a little darker than normal. Like, and sometimes it's hard to tell if it's like damaged, but the translated caption, it indicates that he has like a dirty head. And this is what it says. It says, a man throwing dust on his head. And the result of this, of activating this image, making an appropriate suffumation of like burning the appropriate incense or object and saying magic words and activating this image at the 29th degree of Leo, like when this degree is activated, that will result in providing for jobs and profit. So that's really interesting. I don't know what the throwing dust on his head has to do with jobs or profit. I haven't used it in so long, but I had like some dry shampoo. I felt like it was like a trend a few years ago. And a friend of mine made some like really nice like lavender like scented dry shampoo that had like, I think like bentonite clay. And it was like, if you had like kind of greasy hair and you looked a little gross, but you didn't have time to take a shower, you can kind of like shake some in your hair, rub it around, right? And like shake it out of your hair. It was like, she was like, yeah, this is how chickens bathe. Chickens like roll around in the dirt and like get all their oils off of them. And I wonder if it's like some sort of like grooming practice, like dry shampoo that, you know, or something like that. Or I don't know if it means like getting your hands dirty and like getting down in the dirt, like rolling up your sleeves and like getting to work. And like, that's the metaphor for the job. I have no idea. I mean, this image is from a culture that, you know, I mean, I feel like even a contemporary Persian person might not relate to this. This is so old. It's just kind of like looking at, you know, that whole idea of, you know, the past is a foreign country and people do things differently there. Like, you know, my response to this image might be different. This might be a completely common sight, or it may be an unusual sight for someone who had lived back then. I have no idea. Very curious and very fascinating. And this is my favorite source. The pictures, I got these pictures. I should always shout out my friend Yael Rice, who is an art historian. And she actually went to New Delhi and took these pictures herself about 10 years ago and like provided me with this PDF, which was like one of the sources that really instigated my like deep dive into the degrees. Anyway, so that is very interesting. So there are plenty of people, of course, with Leo degrees always. Like, there's always like, you know, people who have Leo degrees are usually well known and appreciated. And there's a lot of interesting patterns I found here. So let's start with the sun. Now, the sun is the ruler of Leo, right? So the 29th degree of Leo, Claude Debussy, the composer, had his sun here. So I thought he's a romantic composer. I think technically he's an impressionist, but his music is very romantic, beautiful, dreamy. He wrote Clair de Lune and so many other beautiful compositions that are in lots of films. And he's definitely someone who I think is setting a tone. There's a lot of musicians and people who write beautiful music or love songs on this degree. There's also Dua Lipa, who, you know, is a performer, very a lot more contemporary, but she's got that sun here. Also, there's a Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world, or at one point was. I don't know if he still is. Hayden Panettiere, Tori Amos, another musician. Lane Staley, another musician from Alice in Chains. Kim Cattrall. Who is in Sex and the City, and whose friend breakup with Sarah Jessica Parker, who I don't know if they're ever friends, but Kim Cattrall has been not included in sort of reunion episodes of Sex and the City, and there's been a lot of attention on that, so that's interesting. Also, the son here is Princess Margaret. Who was famous for falling in love and getting divorced and being a sort of romantic, you know, a sort of lonely heart, but also, you know, a beautiful like partner or something, or like just a dashing person, I guess, or, you know, a princess who wanted to find her own merman, I suppose. Also the comedian, Bo Burnham, the basketball player Wilt Chamberlain, and Jesse James Rutherford, who has a Sun-Mercury conjunction here, also a musician. The moon at the 29th degree of Leo, which I have to say is, forgot to say this earlier, if you're looking at most charts, it's going to say 28 Leo, right? Because I'm using ordinal numbers, so the 29th. So I looked up, I brought up that movie, The Lure, earlier, which I think is a really great movie, really great like indie movie on Criterion. And I watched that movie on Criterion, and I watched all like the extras and stuff. And they interviewed the actress. There's two mermaids in the movie. And there's like sort of the the first mermaid, the blonde, her name's Marta Mazurek, and they interview her, and she says that she loved mermaids as a child. She would listen to like the Disney soundtrack and sing along like almost every day. And she said almost even to the like in an age where it was like not chill or cool anymore to be like listening to Disney songs and singing them. She says she was like embarrassed to admit it, but she would, you know, even through like middle school and like early adolescence, she really identified with the mermaid. And she was born on June 26, 1990 in Poland. And I don't have a birth time here, but when I pull up that day, the moon was in late Leo. So there's a huge potential that she has the 29th degree of Leo as her moon, although there's no telling for sure, unless maybe someone has her birth certificate or she's found out about this degree image. She has an amazing performance, and I will, you know, recommend it for the 12th time or something. Okay. Also, the moon at this degree is Megan Thee Stallion. And just thinking of her music, the moon, which signifies this like body, right? Your physical body. And she was famous for, you know, the WAP, you know, wet ass pussy or whatever, but this like really like physical performance or physical function of desire, right? This very strong desire, but like really bringing it into the body. Also, people with their moon at this degree, we have Margaret Thatcher, Alexander Skarsgård, who's a Swedish actor who played like Tarzan, Hayley Williams, I believe she's a singer as well. Ludacris, another musician, Kyle MacLachlan, who is in like Twin Peaks. He is Agent Cooper, you know, and in a lot of other great David Lynch movies and other movies. Steve Bannon has his moon here, and that's, you know, something that's interesting. Also, Joe Frost, who is a British TV nanny. And Robert Graves, the poet. And Robert Graves, he wrote a lot about myth and sort of, he had a book called The White Goddess based on the lunar archetypes. Here's a poem of his. It's called Symptoms of Love. Love is universal migraine, a bright stain on the vision, blotting out reason. Symptoms of true love are leanness, jealousy, laggard dawns, are omens and nightmares, listening for a knock, waiting for a sign, for a touch of her fingers in the darkened room, for a searching look. Take courage, lover. Could you endure such pain at any hand but hers? That's beautiful. Okay, moving on to Mercury at this degree, the 29th degree of Leo. We have Sandra Bullock. We have Christopher Nolan, the Batman director, Jesse James Rutherford, who has a Sun Mercury conjunction here, and also Jesse James, like the historical outlaw. So that's really interesting. And I wonder if his mother knew this, or if this is just one of those like cosmic, no such thing as coincidences sort of things. Also Soulja Boy, another, a rapper, another musician, Elliot Smith, the songwriter, Julio Cortazar, a writer and interpreter, or Chris Tucker, the comedian, Martin Freeman, Catherine Bell, David Arquette, and Jeremy Piven. Venus at this degree, the 14th Dalai Lama which is so interesting. The Dalai Lama has his Venus here, and he's a very like public figure of like love and acceptance. And he has this sort of holy holy. I mean, I don't think he's ever been married or been in a romantic relationship, at least publicly. I can't imagine he's ever. I don't really know what his life is really like, right? I just know the public persona, but that's quite interesting. Also, ASAP Rocky has his Venus here, and his relationship with Rihanna has been like all over the internet and all over sort of the tabloid focus lately. So that's very interesting. Monica Lewinsky has her Venus here. And just thinking of Monica Lewinsky as like a lowly intern wanting to be elevated into the world of real people of Washington, D.C., who have good jobs, and getting in this sort of this relationship with a prince or a president, right, a royal figure, and that really burning her, actually. Also, Heinrich Himmler has his Venus here, who was second in command for Nazi Germany. Thinking of how what's his name? Steve Bannon has a degree here. I don't know quite how to interpret that with this imagery, but that's interesting. Also Alicia Vikander, Louis C.K. And Louis C.K. is an interesting person because he's like, was Me Too'd, as like a sex pest, right? He was basically forced. He would like trap young like women like who are stand-up comedians who are ambitious, right? They were trying to get ahead in the world of performance and comedy and acting, and he would like trap them in a room and masturbate in front of them, which is just so humiliating and ridiculous and gross. But that's really interesting that his Venus, his like sort of act of erotic expression, was needed to be seen by someone. Like he had some sort of kink where he needed a woman to see him. And thinking of Monica Lewinsky too, she didn't, I don't think, want to be covered up and seen by the world, but she did want to be recognized by a powerful man. And that had a dynamic in that relationship. And also, John Holmes, who is also known as Johnny Wad, who was a prolific porn performer, for some alliteration there. And so really a strong sexual urge there. also, Christopher Waltz, the actor who's in Inglourious Basterds, his performance in Inglourious Basterds is so good in any movie he's in, but he sort of like traps a woman in a civil conversation and sort of very expertly like lords his position over her. And like, and he's like, he plays a Gestapo person, a Gestapo agent of person. And I feel like that sort of hierarchy of his power over a beautiful woman is just this subtext in the scene of him just having a polite conversation. She can't help think of the violence and inequity and, racial hierarchy or ethnic hierarchy or whatever you call it. And they're exploiting, those behind the scenes, right. And even in a lovely restaurant, she can't help but, conjure those images. So that's an interesting person, that actor. And I also think that actors are interesting because we'll see them perform things that we won't see publicly, someone who does that in their own life so much because they don't want it out, right? You wouldn't want that like publicized, but in art and movies, we can sort of see people play out these experiences. Also Carol Lombard, who was a comedy movie star in the 1930s, huge Hollywood actress who married Clark Gable, and they became this like super couple, just sort of like, Kim and Kanye or J-Lo and Ben Affleck, right? One of those huge couples. We also have Sam Elliott, the cowboy. Caesar Borgia from, you know, the from Renaissance Italy. Also, Alexei Nikolaevich, the young czar of Russia who got murdered. Moon Zappa. And Robbie Robertson from the band. Okay, Mars. So Mars at the 29th degree of Leo is Mars is the Deccan ruler and the ruler of the Egyptian term. So Mars here is pretty strong, the end of Leo. And we have Channing Tatum. We have Romina Power, who's an actress. Queen Rania of Jordan, who I don't know what her life's like. Gary Cooper, the cowboy. Jim Henson, the Muppet creator. Henri Cartier-Bresson. And then we have a small list of musicians or performers who have like a sexual charge or like a seduction to their music, right? So we have Edith Piaf, who was a cabaret singer in like the 40s and 50s. She was famous for singing torch songs, like someone who's carrying a torch of unrequited love, of like painful love. So famous for La Vie en Rose. Also Sting, you know, the musician from The Police, right? He wrote like, "Every step you take, I'll be watching you." This like sexually charged, obsessed character in the song. But then he's also, I think, had interviews where he talked about like tantric sex and has a very sort of like sexually charged, like a public persona. We have Michel Berger, who is a French songwriter and producer who wrote songs for Francois Hardy, among lots of other songs. And Brian Eno has his Mars here. And he's, I feel like, is often viewed as more of like an intellectual or avant-garde pop performer. But I do think that he's got like a great sexual energy or love seduction energy in some of his songs, even if he's himself is an odd one, right? He might be that sort of strange merman coming out of the water. But yeah, like one song I thought of was like, "I'll Come Running to Tie Your Shoe," I think is like one of the sweetest songs ever written, just like a purely beautiful love song. Okay. Jupiter at the 29th degree of Leo. So here we have Kris Jenner, who has actually a Jupiter-Pluto conjunction. I mean, this is an incredible example because, I don't know much about the Kardashian stuff, but whenever they come up in astrology, it's always like right on. It's insane. Like, so this degree talked about people whose marriage is super important and they likely are married twice. And Kris Jenner famously was married to Robert Kardashian, the lawyer. And then she had, you know, four kids, including Kim Kardashian. And then she had a second marriage to Bruce Jenner, now Caitlyn Jenner, and had two more kids, Kendall and Kylie, and right in their super famous reality show family. But this idea that her large family becomes so powerful and wealthy, and she's this matriarch, and her of these two sets of children, it's just huge. It's just so on the nose and really, really interesting. But also, you know, there's other people who I'm not sure. I mean, there's Eleanor Roosevelt, who she was a power couple, you know, a member of a power couple with FDR, right? She was one of the most powerful first ladies that ever happened. Also, Maria Shriver, who was from the Kennedy family, right? And was famously married to Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? So they're like, wow, this political dynasty plus this one of the biggest stars in the world, Mary, and she sort of lent her credibility to his political career. But then they famously divorced, right? He cheated on her with, I think, the maid, right? And had a kid outside that she didn't even know about, right? So she had this very public power couple relationship and then a very public divorce and betrayal. So I hope she's doing better. I'm sure she's fine. I'm sure she'll just, you know, I mean, the poor Kennedys, I mean, just so much tragedy. But, there's other people like Johnny Rotten, Colette, the novelist, Olivier de Carison, who is a sailing champion, Peter O'Toole, the actor, Gavin Newsom, another prominent person in California politics, although I don't know his marriage situation. Also Nathan Lane, the actor, and David Alan Greer, a comedy actor. Also another romance sort of songwriter is Chris Isaak, who I was like, I know that name. Who is it? And then I looked up, he has that song Wicked Game, which is a huge radio hit and is a very sort of sexy, dreamy song. Also Richard Wright, the writer, has his Jupiter here. So that's a very interesting Jupiter placement. Okay, now we have Saturn. And Saturn in Leo isn't its detriment, right? It's Saturn does well in the opposite sign of Aquarius or in Capricorn. So in the signs in Cancer and Leo and the luminaries, Saturn prefers darkness, doesn't like the luminaries. But there are some powerful people here. As I was saying before, I think Saturn and the Sun have this interesting sort of conflicting ideas of power and hierarchy that can kind of work together but kind of be at odds. And there are interesting different iterations of power. So Saturn at the 29th degree of Leo, Amal Clooney, the lawyer, the high power lawyer that George Clooney married, right? He was the Hollywood's most eligible bachelor for so long. And here he picked not another showbiz person, but somebody who has power in her own right and is an individual in her own right. And in her own field, in a field that is not related to, you know, performance. Also, Margaret Trudeau has her Saturn here, and she is the wife of Pierre Trudeau and the mother of Justin Trudeau. So another power couple, powerful marriage, and a marriage that produced another generation of powerful people. Also, Charlene, Princess of Monaco, Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and Furious franchise, plus lots of other movies, Martin Heidegger, the German philosopher that into like phenomenology, hermeneutics, existentialism. Also, Kurt Waldheim, who was a diplomat in the 70s and the president of Austria in the 80s. And then it was revealed that he had been a Nazi in World War II. And he was convicted, very credible accusations of participating in war crimes. I think he denied it, but it seems like he very likely committed war crimes as a Nazi in World War II, and then was deemed a persona non grata by the United States and lots of other countries. So they just would not do business with this guy that was previously respected, liked, that sort of diplomatic partnership that went on for decades just got ruined, right? Kind of like a divorce. Also Anwar Sadat, who was the third president of Egypt. And I'm not really sure of all the nuances of 20th century Egyptian politics, but he got assassinated. And he was a part of lots of complicated partnerships and political movements. Also, John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite And Egon Schiele, one of my favorite artists, who has very romantic, beautiful paintings of intimacy, of like people hugging and like people entwined, that sort of Viennese school. He was a student of Klimt, died young, tragically. Also, Iyengar. BKS Iyengar, who founded this school of Iyengar yoga, which if you've ever taken an Iyengar yoga class, it's a very slow class. It involves lots of like the blocks and the straps and cushions. It's very supported. And it's really good if you're overcoming an injury, or if your body is like really tight and you really haven't exercised or stretched in a really long time. This is a great yoga practice to start. And he developed it because he was teaching yoga in India, and then he came over to America and he was like, Americans are all so damaged. Their bodies, they treat their bodies horribly. And so everybody in America could benefit from Iyengar yoga. So I think that's interesting, especially Saturn, that planet of injury and ailments in that place of the sun, vitality. And he's, you know, really trying to bring vitality back through supports, right? That Saturnian supports. It's a really nice placement there. Very, very loving type of yoga. It's not power yoga. It's not vinyasa, go, go, go. It's a very nurturing type of yoga. Okay. Uranus. We have Axl Rose, right? The lead singer of Guns N' Roses. I mean, talk about the power ballad, right? Talk about love songs, right? That Uranian lightning bolt into that love song, right? Just plug it in and play your love very loud to the whole world. Also, Sheryl Crow and Garth Brooks have Uranus here. So some very large, successful musician songwriters. Also, Steve Irwin, the animal guy. Heather Locklear. Jordan Belfort, who is the guy who was the former stockbroker who wrote Wolf of Wall Street, that the movie's based on. So I would say that sort of betrayal of partnerships, that sort of, there's that, that family partnership of like, yeah, I'm trusting you with my money, right? This guy completely, upended that trust. Also Eddie Izzard, the comedy guy, David Foster Wallace, the author, and Chuck Palahniuk. How do you even say this? The guy that wrote, I've never said it out loud, Palahniuk. The guy that wrote Fight Club and lots of other books. So two very 90s authors, and the philosopher David Hume. Okay, Neptune at the 29th degree of Leo. Audrey Hepburn, what a lovely romantic interest, dreamy, right? That Neptunian dreaminess. So wouldn't you love to be married to Audrey Hepburn? Anyone would, you know, I don't care what your sexual preferences or whatever. It's like Audrey Hepburn's just a dreamboat, right? She's lovely. And also Andy Warhol had his Neptune here. I mean, famously someone who had problems with connecting with people and was kind of obsessed with eroticism, but had this sort of voyeur inability to connect, that Neptunian fog, like he couldn't really reach out and to the prince, right? He had layers of nervousness, psychological makeup that was very strange, but was very creatively fertile, of course. Also, Anne Frank had her Neptune here. That's, she was obviously Diary of Anne Frank. I feel like a big part of that book that I think we all had to read in middle school, that was very sweet and humanizing and relatable, was her crush on the I think his name is Peter, right? She had a crush on the boy that they lived with. And even, you know, and that sort of her having her little romantic dream, even as she's being hidden away from the Nazi death machine that was, you know, going to kill her and most of her family. And like, she still had this beautiful romance in her heart, right? And I feel like that's so touching. And one of the her sort of romantic spirit and sort of youthful optimism, I feel like that is just this beautiful piece of literature that's unlike any other piece of literature. And I, you know, it's still read everywhere. And I really think it's going to have, you know, a long effect for, you know, centuries to come. Also, Roger Moore, one of the James Bonds, has his Neptune here. Max von Sydow, who is the knight from the Seventh Seal. Gunter Grass, who was an eccentric novelist, best known for his first novel, The Tin Drum, published in 1959. They made a movie from it in 1979 that was won lots of awards, is probably one of the best movies ever made, or, you know, in that list. Really, I have not read the book, but I've seen the movie, and it's incredible. It's like this magical realist description of a very unusual child who lives through Poland in World War II, and it's an incredible account of World War II. I mean, also this thing of Gunter Grass, hugely affected by World War II, Anne Frank, of course, also Audrey Hepburn, who is famously like she was a dancer who participated in the Dutch resistance, and that being this origin story of this beautiful young woman who kind of faced those rocky shores, as it were, of that the harsh reality. She got thrown into this war, and actually, you think, what is a teenage girl going to do in World War II? How is she going to help? And she actually did contribute. She actually was thrown into a world that many people did not survive, and she did survive, and she did have like skills and talents that not only helped her survive, but you know, helped others. So that's interesting, generational slice, this Neptune. Also, Giorgio Gucci, if you've seen, House of Gucci, that's a good movie, not as good as The Tin Drum, but it's a good movie. George C. Scott, the actor, and Blythe, another actor, Jane Powell, who's a, Golden Age of Hollywood musical actress, and Eddie Fisher, who's Carrie Fisher's dad, a singer, who's married 5 times, right? So another person who's famous for his marriage and the, you know, the children coming from these marriages. He was married to Debbie Fisher, you know, Carrie Fisher's, or Debbie Reynolds, Carrie Fisher's mother, married to Elizabeth Taylor, married to lots of, like, you know, and then other beautiful women. So another very interesting marriage person. Also, Karlheinz Stockhausen has his Neptune here, and I feel like that's kind of related to Brian Eno. He's like, Stockhausen's a composer and a sort of like electronic music pioneer, and R.D. Lang, the psychologist, and James Last. Okay, let's see, Pluto. Pluto at this degree. We had Maria Shriver, as I brought it before. And then in about a week before Maria Shriver was Bill Gates was born. So he has his Jupiter about a degree off, but, you know, it's a Pluto-Jupiter conjunction. And Bill Gates, again, very famous partnership with Melinda, very famous divorce, right? They had a charity. They did lots of things together publicly. And when Bill Gates got caught raping sex slaves that were, you know, if you picture these young women from Eastern Europe, taken and exploited like mermaids out of their element, right? They couldn't walk. They couldn't run. Some tried to swim off the island. Bill Gates participated in raping them. And Melinda's like, I can't do this anymore, you know? And she lawyered up and she strategically got out of that. And Mel Gibson has his Pluto here. Mel Gibson, very powerful man, and was taped yelling abusive things at his ex-wife, things that were like horribly like racist and anti-Semitic and ugly and very abusive towards her. And, you know, if you've ever heard, I heard a little slice of some of that. I was like, oh, turn it off. It's so horrible. I can't hear it. You know, that Pluto underworld, that the really horrible parts of the pain we can cause in our partnerships. But then also, as I said before, Maria Shriver and Kris Jenner. So again, Kris Jenner has the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction. Now, I know she's really intense. I'm not too into Kardashian lore and the Jenner lore. I don't think she's abusive. I think she's probably like pushy and intense and, you know, like a mama bear. But I wouldn't think that anybody with this placement is an abuser, but they can be very intensely powerful. Like Whoopi Goldberg has her Pluto here. I mean, she's, you know, not an abusive thing. I think she recently got in trouble for saying something about actually the Holocaust, which is interesting because World War II is coming up, and it was insensitive and incorrect and all this stuff, but it was also, it's a little bit different than, you know, committing an actual crime of, you know, hurting people's feelings through words is not the same as even yelling at them abusively. Like, I don't think, you know, I like Whoopi Goldberg, and I think that, you know, she could say a lot of horrible things before I would be like, okay, I'm done with her. You know, she's chill. Also, Bill Maher. It's another person who says things that like hurts people's feelings and riles people up and maybe gets at some of the undercarriage of issues, also though, I think he's, you know, very flawed in his views and, you know, very biased, but who isn't? Kim Cattrall. So she has a Sun-Pluto conjunction, right? Samantha on Sex and the City recently been given a lot of attention about being excluded. Osama bin Laden has his Pluto here. Damn, this is some pretty intense Pluto people. It's like Whoopi Goldberg's doing a lot of work, and Kris Jenner of keeping this Pluto positive. Kim Cattrall, she's a nice actress. Billy Idol, right, very intense aesthetically. He wrote White Wedding. He and his little sister was going to get married to someone he didn't think was a good match, right? So he wrote White Wedding as a warning to her. And she didn't get married because of that song. So that's a really interesting one. Also, Gina Davis has her Pluto here. I don't know anything about Gina Davis's like personal life, but she was, you know, in Thelma and Louise. And in Thelma and Louise, I think she's Thelma. I forget who's who. But she's the one. She has a horrible husband, and she sort of ends up leaving him for this other partnership with her best friend, right? But that partnership, it's like that it, leaving her husband for this other relationship that's just like platonic friend relationship, that's a very strong partnership, comes with its was her demise, right? She could have just suffered in silence for the rest of her life, but instead she went out with this like Plutonian like atom bomb, right? And for freedom and for actualizing who she really is and for being happy. And also Spike Lee has this Pluto here. So, I think that he's been criticized for the way that certain relationships are depicted, but I think like, I don't know. I mean, people reevaluate certain things and say this is problematic now, but I remember watching She's Gotta Have It. If you know, it was a few years ago at this point and fucking loving it and thinking that movie was great. And I heard there's like, I guess there's like a rape scene that's like controversial, but I just like, I think I'm a huge fan of Spike Lee, and I think he's a powerful voice, and I think he's a very positive figure. And anyone who's criticizing him is like, it's only because his art is so worthy of attention that, you know, it's like, I want to listen to that criticism because I want to just be thinking about his art more, thinking about his movies more. Okay. North Node, Diana, Princess of Wales, fucking mermaid plucked out of the obscurity of the minor aristocracy of England. Poor her. But that story of her being brought into the royal family, and that killed her, right? It just like a mermaid, right? Just like she actually, there's very few of us could withstand that transition from being, you know, privileged, rich, but normal life, and then going into like the upper echelons of power. And in that family, that is not a desirable place for, I would not want to do that. But I could see how, you know, if you're 18 and you have that opportunity, how alluring would that be, right? Like, do you want to be a princess? I guess, yeah. And then be careful what you wish for, right? Okay, North Node also hears Jimi Hendrix, you know, the greatest guitarist of all time and great songwriter and great performer. Also, Ricky Gervais, a very, you know, I would say like he's a Cancer, and I love that because he's so emotional and he really gets into his son's in Cancer. And, his comedy about like the awkwardness and, human relationships and the cruelty that people do to each other, it's just, you know, incredible. Like when he's good, he's good, but he's also, he can also be like too much. Also Ronald Inho, he's a famous football person. Player, Randy Orton, who is an American professional wrestler, Robert Hand, our, you know, planets in transit, right? Like a great astrologer, and Gemma Jones, who's a British actress. Also, Kenneth Kaunda, president of Zambia, okay, who that might be an interesting person to look through. Now, okay, moving to last but not least, the ascendant. If this is your ascendant, this is like a huge point for you. Looking at all of these charts, you know, I think that there's got to be a chart or two that's off or incorrect. Time, of course, for a slow-moving planet like Pluto, that doesn't matter all that much. But for the moon, that matters. And for the ascendant, that really matters because the ascendant changes every 4 minutes. So all of these people who have 29th degree of Leo on their ascendant, if you're interested in any of these, I would look them up, double check, because I've got to be wrong on at least one of them, maybe more. Okay, but this first one's really interesting. It's Anne Boleyn, the Queen of England from 1533 to 1536, the second wife of Henry VIII. That he then executed because he wanted to divorce her, right? And the church would not let him divorce. So he executed her, accused her of treason. And just, it was just this whole string of events that marked the start of the English Reformation, right? And England broke off from the Catholic Church. And because this guy wanted a divorce from this woman, so much history changed. So much history was made. And that's incredible that this power couple that had this in that, you know, just the most famous divorce in history, I would say. Mystic Meg, who I guess is a British like tarot reader or astrologer. Bernie Madoff, has his ascendant here. It's interesting because the Wolf of Wall Street guy has a degree here. So that's some sort of like partnership, devious partnership or unequal partnership. Also Paul Gauguin, the painter who painted in the South Pacific. This is very interesting. Guillaume Apollinaire, the French poet who was a beautiful poet who fought in World War I and wrote about life in the trenches and was tragically shot 2 days before Armistice Day. Also, Henrik Ibsen, a really great playwright, up there with like Chekhov and sort of those foundational playwrights that write stories in a way that is still relevant today. Like he was one of those first people to write in this realist style that is like, you know, when you watch The Sopranos or when you watch, you know, most dramatic things on television, it's like in the shadow of Ibsen, in the shadow of Chekhov. So that's interesting. And I especially since a lot of those stories have a lot to do with intimate relationships, romances, always a driving force of drama, right? Andrew Lloyd Webber, Phantom of the Opera, Cats, Jesus Superstar. I mean, talk about romance, right? Phantom of the Opera, like, come on. Like, that's just like the cheesiest dramatization of a partnership. I think there's like a love triangle in that play, but that's pretty good. Also another painter, Edouard Manet, Anton Bruckner, the composer, Jackie Robinson, the baseball player, P.T. Barnum, the American entrepreneur. So a lot of interesting people with this degree. And if you have this degree, hope you got something out of this, if you have it in your chart. And happy full moon, and have a nice February. See you next time around. Bye.